8 o'clock hour of the Burns and Gambo show. Monty Williams, a guest today of the Bickley and Murata show, on a team that the last four times they've been on the floor, three of them have been really bad losses. And Monty says we're just giving these games away.
We just feel like we've given away, or didn't play as consistently in three games that we've lost. Mm-hmm. And last night was one of those games where the consistency and coverages on the defensive end wasn't there in timely situations. And then turning the ball over 18 times. We've had a few games this year where we've had higher than normal turnovers. We've also had a game this year where we had three for the game. So that's something that, you know, when you watch the film, the things that you see on film kind of match your gut. And that's not a good feeling.
I can't imagine watching the tape of last night's game was a good feeling for anybody for the Suns. Because, yes, what does your gut tell you? Your gut tells you we did a lot of things we shouldn't have done in that game last night against Memphis. And I'm sure watching the tape confirmed all of that.
Yeah. And, you know, no excuses here, right? And no, we haven't played in a win. None of that matters, man. This season is set up for this team to get to the playoffs. And some people believe to do even better than that, to be a top four seed in the Western Conference. Now, I don't know how this is going to play out. You felt really good after the start, but then they've lost three out of four. And, you know, it's kind of in some ways this, you know, season in, you know, mirrors a little bit of the Cardinals a little bit. But they got a rebound from this, and they made a change in the starting lineup. They didn't have Dario Saric last night, but there's a lot of teams that are playing without guys. No excuse that they didn't have Dario. No excuse that, you know, that they didn't play in a week. They got to win these games. You have to win these games. And, you know, they're not clicking. And when one guy was off as bad as Booker was, it has an effect. Now, whether Monty sticks with that starting lineup, if he changes some things, whether Saric will be back, you know, all of that's yet to be determined.
It is. Now, Williams, and again, this is a lot of the conversation with Bickley and Murata a couple hours ago. Monty thinks there are signs out there that the Suns are going to get better, and here's what they are.
But it's the timely situations on defense that probably keep me up a little longer than I want to be. But I know this particular group has a great level of remorse, and they, because of the veterans we've added, they talk a lot about things that we talk about in our meetings. And so when we get together, we basically say the same things. And that to me is a sign of a group that's going to get better.
It's just a question of how quickly can they get better. And we, you know, because we had that week off of watching them, it was a week off of kind of looking for evidence that things were going to get better. Last night didn't really help in that regard. There were certainly better things about last night's performance. They shot the ball very well from three. They had a ton of assists. DeAndre Ayton obviously played very well. There were things to like about how they played last night, unlike, say, that Washington game where there wasn't anything to like at all. But this
was over by halftime.
Yeah, right. I mean, that game was an embarrassment. I mean, even the Detroit game, they played well for a quarter and a half, and then everything just kind of went to hell after that. But the veteran presence on this team, okay, we're not talking anymore about a bunch of kids around Devin Booker. And we're not talking anymore about veterans who really don't want to be here a la Trevor Ariza. We're talking about established, winning veterans who chose the Phoenix Suns, in particular in Chris Paul and Jay Crowder. I would imagine guys like that help them get through moments like they're going through right now. I would hope.
Probably, and it's going to be, right, because you're not the Lakers. So you're going to go through these lulls in the season. As much as we don't want it as fans, you want them to be consistent. You want them to beat the teams they're supposed to beat. You know, you're going to go through these lulls. You're going to go through these growing pains. And, you know, and a lot of these guys, you know, you look at the starting lineup. A lot of these guys haven't played together a whole lot. When Crowder was in the starting lineup, you had him and you had Paul. And then you had, you know, other guys that have come in and are getting playing time, like Galloway. These guys, they probably need some time to gel. Now, when they click, you know, I expect that they're very capable of, you know, we were talking about winning streaks. You know, they're very capable of going on these winning streaks that they haven't had in previous years. Can they win five in a row? Can they win six in a row? I mean, I think they can. Have they found themselves yet? No, because then they're not clicking. Because at times, the second unit has completely outplayed the first unit. And now the first unit's made a change to the starting lineup and to see if they could, you know, get something going on the starting lineup. And then, you know, Paul's taking responsibility for the things not going right and the turnovers last night. And then Booker's taking responsibility because he didn't play well. When this team clicks, the talent is there. You know, Monty's got to get it out of him, but the talent is there for this to be a really good basketball team.
Yeah, Monty did also say he likes the spacing and the pace and that Cam Johnson in the starting lineup, all those things that he brought by being in the starting lineup, and he thinks that's going to develop over time. He liked Crowder with the second unit, expects that to get even better when Saric is back. I would take from that suggestion that Cam Johnson might be in the starting lineup for a while now to kind of roll with this and see how it goes and expect several more games with Cam Johnson in the starting lineup and Crowder coming off the bench. Of course, the big talking point from last night, Ayton. DeAndre Ayton with a good statistical game, 18 points, 16 boards, which was awesome, 3 assists, a block. But it was his aggressiveness, and that was a big conversation point today when Monty was on Bickley and Marotta. Where did that come from?
You know, it comes from him just humbling himself and listening to a lot of people talk to him about, you know, his talent level and his ability and how he has to apply it. He's been on the floor with Devin, Chris, and Jay after every practice, and they've been really talking to him about his footwork and pick and rolls, his ability to do what he did last night, and he's been humble enough to listen and apply it.
Boy, that's...
It's 22.
Isn't that what we've always wanted from DeAndre Ayton, though, right? I mean, you got these great guys around you. Listen to them. They're trying to help you be the very best you can be.
Well, because I think some people want DeAndre to be something that he's not. And, I've told you, I believe that either you have that or you don't, that aggressiveness, that fire. Doesn't mean he can't be efficient and he can't be a really good basketball player. You know, if he's not as aggressive as you may want him to be, and it just may not be in his nature to be that type. You know, the kid grew up in the Bahamas. He hasn't played basketball as long as a lot of these other people. He's only 22 years old, man. He's only 22. Like, there's a lot more for him to learn and get better at. I kept harping on how great he's been with the defensive rebounds, and he had 16 rebounds last night. I think 13 or 14 of them were defensive, and how much that helps the Suns. But a lot of people want to see the offensive game. Like, how much can that take? Because, right, we talked about how the Suns live and die with the three. Well, you don't have to if he dominates inside. You could have, hey, listen, the three's not falling. Okay, give it to that guy. Give it to number 22. Yeah. Throw it to him. The threes aren't falling. Throw it to him. Or late in the game, you know, his ability to get to the free throw line could be crucial because he's a good free throw shooter. So that's the thing about his offensive game. And the people are right. He hasn't been aggressive. He takes too many fadeaways. He settles for jumpers. He doesn't dunk the basketball. I get it. I mean, kicks it out to the three-point line. Yep, I get it. And they got to work with him. I mean, they got to continue to work with him. But, you know, when you ask people to be patient, they don't want to be patient. Hey, be patient with DeAndre. He's only 22. I don't want to be patient. He's got to be great now. He was the number one overall pick. Compare him to Luka. You can't. Like, you can't. He's not Luka. He's young. And bigs take longer to develop. Be patient. But people don't want to be patient. They want it now. They're like, you know, the Willy Wonka girl. I want it now. She wants the golden goose now. She doesn't want to wait for the golden goose. She wants it right now.
Monty did go on to say that Ayton has definitely raised the bar with games like last.
You know, as far as him doing it every night, he's raised the bar. When you have a game like that and you make plays like that, that's what we expect of him. He has the ability, and now he has to have the mental stamina to do it every single night. And I think the more he does that, people are going to get out of his way, or he's going to generate shots for us on the backside. So it's a huge component for our offense, but it's certainly something that we expect from DA every single night.
You know, I was just thinking about this. This reminds me of something that we've seen last year with Monty and Ayton, when Ayton wasn't suspended, but when Monty was coaching up Ayton, and even Booker to a certain extent too. When Ayton has nights like he had last night where he's showing off that aggression, where he's being the player offensively that we all want him to be, I feel like the Suns, and rightfully so, I'm not saying this is wrong, they go way out of their way to make sure they publicly praise DeAndre Ayton for moments like he had last night because they want to reward him. They want him to understand you know, publicly, that's what we expect of you. He's humble enough to accept the coaching that we've been giving him without thinking he's a finished product. They want to reward him publicly after games like that because, as Monty makes it very clear, that version of Ayton that we saw last night, Gambo, that is the version they expect out of him every single night when he takes a basketball floor. I don't know if that's realistic or not, but they're trying to coax that out of him, and I think the public praise is part of that coaxing.
I think so. I could buy that, right? Because, okay, continue to build. Don't break him down as much as build him up, right? You got to build him up too. You want to break him down, but you also want to build him up.
Yep.
And I think that's what Monty's got to realize, because DeAndre's going to hear so much negative when he listens to the fans, because they want more. They want more, and they want it now, and they're not going to be patient. So Monty also has to be like, okay, well, you got to do this, you got to do this. But at the same time, he's got to build him up so that the kid doesn't break and the kid doesn't crack and the kid doesn't start doubting himself. You want him to believe in himself. You know he's got all this God-given talent, and he's got – can't teach size. Man, he's 250 pounds. So you can't teach that. So he's got to find that delicate area of, okay, I've got to break you down while everybody else is also breaking you down, because you can't think that you've arrived, you're this great player. You know, but I also need to build you up so you can gain in confidence. And that way, when you get the ball down low, you're confident to do the things that we're asking you to do.
Kyler Murray, headed into his third season in the NFL. Is this truly the make-it-or-break-it year for him and the Cardinals? That's what's coming up next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
I want one. I want a golden goose.
We talk all the time here on the Burns and Gambo Show and all the shows here at the radio station about next year, the importance of next year for the Arizona Cardinals, everything that is on the line for them as an organization. You go from 3 wins to 5 wins to 8 wins. You start a season 5-2. You start a season 6-3, like the Cardinals did this year. And you don't make the playoffs. It puts an enormous amount of pressure, rightfully so, on the organization to make the playoffs next year. That pressure is on everybody. It's on Steve Keim. It's on Cliff Kingsbury. It's on Michael Bidwell. And it's certainly on Kyler Murray. Especially when you consider, and I really enjoyed this story that Gambo sent along today via the email, about how year three is kind of the big one when it comes to a quote-unquote elite quarterback getting to the postseason. And and the story was on Revenge of the Birds, Gambo. It's got a long, long list
of
some really good quarterbacks, and they all made the postseason by their third season, right?
Yeah, listen to the names. We'll just go through them because the names make the story. Here's they say below is the current notable quarterbacks who earned a postseason berth within their first 3 years as a starter. So you got Russell Wilson, Matthew Stafford, Derek Carr, Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson, Carson Wentz, Jared Goff, Mitch Trubisky, Deshaun Watson, Pat Mahomes, Brady, Breeze, Rodgers, Dak Prescott, Ben Roethlisberger, Matt Ryan, Cam Newton, Andy Dalton, Marcus Mariota, Kirk Cousins, Phillip Rivers, Teddy Bridgewater. Long list, okay? But that's what they're saying. By their third year, every single one of those guys had taken their team to the postseason. By the third year, every single one of those quarterbacks. Now, some of those quarterbacks are great, and some of them are really good. And there's a couple of them that aren't very good, right? They're okay. He's okay. He's an average quarterback. I don't know if any of those guys are bad quarterbacks. You know, Bridgewater got hurt, but I like him. Cousins is decent.
Mitch Trubisky's a bad quarterback.
Yeah, give me Trubisky. Anybody else? No? Wentz, we don't
that
know
I would
about.
Say is a, that, I would, that I would say is a bad quarterback? No. There's nobody else on that list I would say is a bad quarterback. They're all at least decent, with the exception of Mitch Trubisky. I think he's the only one on this list I would categorize as a bad quarterback. Everybody else is at least decent. Yeah.
So that's a good list. So these guys, they made it. But a third year, I was in the postseason. So that's – I don't know if they're judging, like, okay, by your third year, you've got to make it. There's plenty of quarterbacks that probably didn't make it by their third year. But they said, now let's look at some other notable quarterbacks who failed to reach the three-year mark. Jameis Winston, Sam Darnold, Blaine Gabbert, Jake Locker, Johnny Manziel, Paxton Lynch, Blake Bortles. Now, I don't think that this means that if Kyler Murray doesn't get there, he's in that category. But clearly, a lot of these quarterbacks found a way to, within 3 years, to win enough games to get into the playoffs.
I don't think it means that Kyler's in that category either, but I do think if this time of year from right now, the Arizona Cardinals haven't made the playoffs, I think, well, first of all, I think if that happens, I don't think Cliff Kingsbury's the coach of the Arizona Cardinals. I am really curious as to whether Steve Keim is the general manager of the Arizona Cardinals, and I do think that there will be a persistent, heavy dose of questions about whether Kyler Murray is truly a franchise quarterback that you can win around. Whether that's fair or not, I don't know. But I do think those questions will, I think, rightfully be at least asked a year from now if they don't get in. It'll be easy to point to the head coach or the general manager as the reasons why this organization wasn't able to get into the postseason a year from now, given the pressure that's on them. But I do think, to your point, you kind of have to expand that conversation out to the quarterback himself. I mean, he's not immune from this conversation, right? We've got to include him in wondering, okay, is he really the future? Is he really the guy this thing needs to be built around if he can't get them to the playoffs after just 3 years? It sucks that it's on him like that, but he's the quarterback. That's the gig. This is a quarterback league. That's how this works, and I think those questions will exist a year from now if he hasn't gotten them in.
I think so. I mean, yeah, probably. Now, a lot of it will depend on what type. Like, if they don't make the playoffs, there's going to be probably going to be some big changes, and it'll be looked at as a failure, and there'll be a lot of question marks on Kyler, on Cliff, on everybody. There'll be question marks if he cannot take this team to the playoffs next season, especially if the playoffs they expanded playoffs and extra team. If it stays that way, I can't imagine, because you're talking about what? Did you go and 3 wins to 5 wins to 8 wins to eight again or 7, you don't make that jump. Like, you got to make that jump now. And a jump, 3 to 5 to 8, a jump could be 9 or 10. It doesn't have to be 11. Like, you could jump from 8 to 9, that probably gets you into playoffs. 8 to 10, and you definitely get in the playoffs. But stagnant would be, you stay at 8 or you go down to 7, and then people will look at that as a failure.
Yeah, they will, and they should. Now, they should, with a caveat, okay? Obviously, it goes without saying, how you don't make the playoffs matters, right? If they don't make the playoffs because above said franchise quarterback misses half the season because he had an injury we get all caught up here on Sports Talk Radio about these big blanket statements, they've got to make the playoffs or else, and while mostly that's true, I think we're all smart enough to know that there are certain exceptions to that rule. And obviously there are exceptions to the Cardinals have to make the playoffs next year rule. But man, to look at a list like this and to understand that there are some mediocre quarterbacks who have made the playoffs after 3 years. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater, he's an okay quarterback. He did it. Andy Dalton, he's okay. He did it. Cam Newton, he's okay. He did it. Trubisky, Goff, Wentz, they all did it too. If he, assuming he's healthy, and he being Kyler can't get it done after his third year, then we're going to have, okay, like the coach conversation, I hate to diminish it. That's an easy conversation to have. You can find lots of coaches. The general manager conversation, that's an easier conversation to have. You can find lots of general managers. Franchise quarterbacks are hard. We thought this one was done. We thought this box was checked for 15 years. But if after 3 he hasn't gotten them into the playoffs, that, Gambo, will be the really awkward, painful conversation to have a year from now. Oh, man.
Yeah, the first thing people are going to say?
What are they going to say?
They're going to say, why didn't they trade him for Deshaun Watson? That's going to be the first thing they say. Why didn't you trade him for Deshaun Watson? Why couldn't you have given a better offer than whatever team gets him? Why didn't you make a better offer than that team? I mean, people are going to look at that, right? They'll probably look at that. I still believe in Kyler. I still think that he could be your franchise quarterback, and I think that he's really good. You could question the talent around him. They need more. They need more talent around him. You've got a number one wide receiver, but you don't have a 2. You might have a 3, yep. But you don't have a 4. You don't have a 5. Do you have a number one running back? I mean, it did last year with Drake. He was a number one running back, but he'll be gone this year, I believe. So, how about a tight end? I like Dan Arnold. He did a good job, but do you need more? You got to look at the talent. He needs more talent around him. I really think that they've got to get another wide receiver. They need to get one more stud wide receiver, whether they do it in the draft or free agency, I don't know. But they need somebody more reliable that can catch passes so it's not all on DeAndre Hopkins.
By the way, you owe a donation to my charitable cause.
I do. What do I owe you? Was it $25?
I think it was $25.
Right.
To my. So I'll let you know what that's gonna be. Which, by the way, okay, totally off topic here.
Yeah.
I was gone with because my dad passing away and whatever happened with Keyshawn. Did he pay off the bet?
As of right now, no.
So what? He's collecting interest, is what I'm hearing.
As of right now, I think what's the date of when the Cardinals season ended?
That was like January. The 3rd, I think.
I messaged on January 12th, which was a week ago.
Oh my god.
And one of his guys got back and said, "Okay, give us a few days, we'll take care of it." I said, "Okay, you need to screenshot it and send it." You know? So that was on January 12th.
Wow. It's the 19th today. Someone's collecting his bucks.
Because I didn't even tell him what donation I wanted him to make. I mean, I have to go through this with him.
Yeah.
I was hoping by now he would have paid this off.
Sarah, what did you say the date was?
It was January 3rd was the day that the Cardinals lost to the Rams.
When did they clinch the eighth win?
That
would have been like December.
Let me scroll.
17th-ish?
The 8th was December 20th against the Eagles. Was that the 8th
tomorrow,
win?
So tomorrow is 1 month from when he lost the bet.
Shame.
I messaged him the other day. And then somebody got back to me that handles his social and assists him and stuff like that. And he said, I'm going to go, look, I don't want to call him out with a tweet. He's going to get a ton of hate. But I have the charities are telling me they haven't gotten the money yet. And they said, this was a week ago today. All right, give us a few days. We'll take care of it. So now we're at January. So now I just sent another message. Have we made the donations? Because if not, take a blowtorch to Keyshawn by the end
we're
of this
have
week
to publicly
if those
shame
donations
him.
Are yep. not made.
We're going to have to publicly shame the man.
You don't
shame. Shame.
Yeah.
Shame.
Shame. You don't get a month, man. You know, it shouldn't take a month to pay off a bet.
Pay up. And he didn't, like I say, he doesn't even know which charity I want him to donate to. I mean, heck,
yeah,
I just figured it out
yours.
A couple days. Yeah, I have to send him mine. I have to send him which one I want him to donate to as well. All right, good stuff. Got to see what's going on with that. Last year, the Suns started off hot and they faded. I hate to ask the question, are they doing the same thing this year? That's coming up next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Man, that didn't take long. One of our listeners just publicly shamed Keyshawn Johnson for not paying off the bet to us. Justin just tagged us in a tweet, the show account, your account, my account, and Keyshawn. You haven't paid your bet yet, Keyshawn?
Shame.
And then it's the meme from Game of Thrones. Shame, shame, shame.
The guy got back to me because I believe he did.
Shame.
Do you know Justin Fields follows us? Not that Justin Fields, but.
Yeah, it's not a very, I mean, nothing against this Justin. He looks like a very nice guy, and he's enjoying his time on the beach. That is not, that Justin is not the presumed number two pick overall in the NFL draft. I'm looking at a picture of him right now. Yes, he did. He's enjoying himself at the beach, but that ain't going to be the guy who is the number two pick in the NFL draft. Okay, sorry, fine. Justin.
We're rooting for
that's
you.
Not you. We are. I hope the best for you, Justin, but that's not going to be you. I don't think.
Nope.
Thank you for publicly shaming him. No.
One of the guys got back to me and he said, he goes, I believe he paid it off. I need to get screenshots from him. He's all good, Gamble. He ain't trying to avoid paying it off. Come on, man. All right.
Okay.
Listen, I need proof that he made the payments.
Yeah, prove it then.
I need proof that he made the payments. That's it. Did he make the payments or not? I need screenshots.
These are the teams.
I'm not taking it for his word.
No. Oh, no, no, no. You've got to proof. I mean, I think that's fair. I mean, he's got to do the same thing for me, you know, and I haven't even told him what donation I want him to make yet. So we need proof. We need to, that was a very public bet that we made with him. I don't think it's unfair to ask for some sort of verification on it.
That's right.
The Phoenix Suns have lost games to the 3-10 Detroit Pistons, the 3-8 Washington Wizards, the 5-9 Sacramento Kings, the 7-6 Memphis Grizzlies, and the 10-4 LA Clippers. That's also kind of the part about this that bugs us a little bit too, right? Is that it's not like they're losing to the Nuggets or the Jazz or the Lakers or teams that we expected to be real thorns in the side of the Phoenix Suns. I mean, three of these losses have been to three of the worst teams in the NBA, and that's the part that really grinds our gears a little bit when talking about the Suns.
Yeah, because these are the teams that, you know, if you want to be a great team, you want to be a top four team, you have to win those games. I mean, no ifs, ands, or buts. You have to win those games against those teams. And if you're not, then, you know, these are bad basketball teams. Detroit's not a good basketball team. Washington's not a good basketball team. Sacramento is not a good basketball team. They're not good. And you start to pile these, because now you got less margin for error. Now you got to beat a lot of good teams to get where you want to get to. So get off to a good start, but you look, and we'll even take a look. Let's take the Jazz. Okay, the Jazz are 9-4 on the season. Their losses have been to Phoenix, Brooklyn, the Knicks, who aren't bad this year, and then one bad loss, they lost to Minnesota. So they do have a loss to Minnesota. But you look at the better teams in the league, and they don't have losses like that. They don't have a lot of those losses that pile up. You lose one every now and then because, you know, you're not motivated, or you overlook the opponent, or they shoot lights out. That happens. But you got to beat these teams if you want to be one of those top four teams in the West. If not, then you're just going to fight for a player positioning at 6, 7, or 8.
Yeah, and that's been the frustrating part. One of the frustrating things about the Phoenix Suns and their 7-5 record. I mean, it's still good enough for fourth in the Western Conference. All right, I mean, everybody else is breathing down their neck: the Spurs, the Blazers, the Warriors, even the Grizzlies to a certain extent, and obviously Dallas. They're not off to the start everybody thought they would be. The Nuggets, the same thing. Those two teams are both 6-7. I expect a lot of these standings to kind of settle one way or another, and that teams that are good early aren't going to be as good late, and teams that aren't so great early, they'll be much better late. We'll see where the Phoenix Suns stand in all of that. But the other element about this that is a little concerning, and I know we've got a whole week where we didn't see the Suns play, but one of the things that we were talking about, Gambo, you and I, after the early start for the Suns, the good early start for the Suns, was, okay, we've seen this before. They got off to a really good start last year, and then it all fell apart. They were, 7-4, I think, and then they lost 16 of their next 20 games last year. And I remember distinctly you and I spending a couple of days talking about why this team is different, why this team is not doomed to repeat what happened last year to the Suns. They've lost 3 of the last 4 games. Do we still feel confident that this year is different compared to last year when it comes to following up the great start with a really bad stretch like last year's team did?
What were the Cardinals, 5-2?
5-2,
6-3. 5-2, and they're like, okay, they got to make the playoffs now, and they didn't. But that was, you know, 7 games in a 16-game season. You're almost talking about 50%. At the start that the Suns got off to, what was it? Was it 7 and – I'm trying to think because they lost 3 out of 4. Were they 7-2?
I believe they were, yes.
I don't think that we could take that as a strong sample size. I don't think it was enough games. You were happy with the win against Utah because they played so great defensively. You were happy with the win against Denver. You were happy with the win against Dallas. They were down big to the Clippers. They made them work for the win. That was a good comeback, even though they lost the game. You felt good about the way they were playing, and there were a lot of people that were jumping on that bandwagon. There were a lot of Kendrick Perkins and many others were jumping on that Suns bandwagon. It weren't anybody slow the roll. Now, when the Cardinals were 5-2, there were a ton of people that said, don't believe in this team. They're not legit. Don't believe in this team. Tons of them. There was a tons of doubters, haters, whatever you want to call it. With the Suns, it was more like that people believed that they were legit, that they were that good. Maybe it was the Chris Paul effect. I don't know. But a lot of people believed when the Suns got off to that really hot start before they've lost these 3 out of 4 games that they were legit, a lot more than believed that the Cardinals were legit at 5-2. Agree?
Yes, agree. I would agree with that. Yeah. And I still think the Suns are one of the better teams in the Western Conference. Now, a week and a half ago, and by the way, I looked it up, they were 6-1, they were 7-3. Those were some of their like high points when it comes, and that was about the time we were having this conversation about, okay, tell me why this is different from last year. Tell me why they're not going to have the same, you know, problems that they did a year ago after starting off so fast. I still believe at the end of the day, this year's team had Chris Paul, last year's team didn't. This year's team has Jay Crowder, last year's team didn't. This year's team has a better veteran presence and more experience when it comes to winning. Last year's team didn't. Last year's team didn't have DeAndre Ayton after the first game. He had that 25-game suspension and had to sit out. Last year's team started going through a whole bunch of injuries and were missing a bunch of guys. This year's team is dealing with that to a certain extent with the COVID and the health and safety protocols and things like that. I still believe this year's team, while losing 3 of their last 4, is not in the same position they were a year ago, where you're going to start to see this slide and we're going to start to see it. Oh, there it goes. It's all falling apart just like it did a year ago. I think they're much better equipped to handle it. I would just like this game against the Rockets. They just traded James Harden. Yeah, they got Oladipo, but John Wall's not going to play in the game. That's a Rockets team you should be able to beat. I really want to be in here on Thursday.
You got their schedule in front of you right now?
The Suns, yeah. I can get it here real quick.
All right, get it real quick. Go over the next 5 games because I think that, okay, you know, if we want to believe that they're more like this team that was 7-1 or even 6-3 and not like the team that won 3 out of 4, then you got to start winning games that you look at the schedule and you say, okay, like you just mentioned the Houston game. You got to win that game.
Here you go. Houston on Wednesday.
Okay. Got to win.
Denver on Friday.
Where?
Here.
Got to win.
Denver on Saturday.
Okay,
also
I'll split
here.
I'll split with Denver. I'll split.
Okay. Home against Oklahoma City.
Have to win. Have to beat Oklahoma City.
Home against Golden State.
I don't know what to think about Golden State yet, man. They've had a couple of good wins.
I know they have. They beat the Lakers the other night, didn't they?
Yeah.
They have had a couple of good wins. Those are the next 5 games.
Okay,
are they a good team? A good team's going to go at least 3-2 against that schedule, probably closer to 4-1.
Agree.
Right?
Agree. But you can't, like, you could lose to Golden State, and you could lose a game to Denver. But you can't lose to Oklahoma City. You can't lose to Houston. Like, if you want to be legit, like, if you're not legit, then you may lose those games. Because they lost to Washington, they lost to Detroit, they lost to Sacramento. But, like, if you really want to be one of the elite teams, got to start winning these games that people expect you to win.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, ahead of the AFC Championship game, do the Chiefs possess any kind of advantage at all by the Bills not knowing who their starting quarterback is going to be? We'll talk about it coming up on the Burns and Gambo show. About 2 hours ago, Adam Schefter tweeted out that Patrick Mahomes cleared certain steps on Monday, some big steps, in his words, quote-unquote, some big steps. But he remains in the NFL's concussion protocol with what is considered a concussion, and it's too early to say that he will definitely play in Sunday's conference championship against the Bills. Andy Reid yesterday reiterated that at this point he's not sure about Mahomes' availability, I should say, for that game on Sunday.
I just leave that with Rick and the docs, and because of the protocol, it's a no-brainer from the coach's family. You don't have to think about it. You just have to go forward and make sure you have an answer if he's there, and an answer if he's not there. I can't tell you from a medical standpoint where he's at. I mean, I don't know that. So that's their decision, and I just follow it.
Keeping that mystery alive, Gambo.
Yeah, because it makes the Bills have to prepare for 2 quarterbacks. You have to. You have to prepare for Patrick Mahomes, and you have to prepare for Chad Henne. And you might sit there and say, okay, well, let's put all our effort into Mahomes. We expect he's going to play. But if he doesn't play, Henne's a completely different quarterback. So that, you know, that does add a little bit of extra prep time for the Bills because they've got to think of the possibility that they've got to go up against Henny as much as they've got to think about going up against Mahomes.
Yeah, and Andy Reid expressed his confidence in Chad Henne, and why not after what Chad Henne did in that AFC divisional game this weekend against Cleveland?
Yeah, listen, I mean, all the guys have confidence in Chad. I mean, it was if he has to be in there, just like they did Matt the year before, and it's the way those guys handle themselves, and so I don't think. You know, that wouldn't change if he has to play. I mean, I don't think twice about that. I just, if Pat can't go, then Chad jumps in and rolls.
And to your point, here's Sean McDermott, the head coach of the Bills, on preparing for two quarterbacks and the reality that that's what they have to do.
We've got to prepare for this system. We've got to prepare for both quarterbacks, and that's why we've got a lot of work to do this weekend.
Yeah, adds a little bit of a degree of difficulty to the equation, for sure.
No question. Like, I think Mahomes is going to play, but nobody knows. I mean, nobody knows if Patrick Mahomes is going to play, and Chad Henne's a veteran quarterback. Like, he's been in this league a long time. It's like you don't have any, you know, it's not like Johnny Wolford's coming into play, right? Or Strevler's coming into play, and you're looking at it like, man, I mean, Strevler, you got no tape on Strevler. You got no tape on Johnny Wolford. Look about some of these quarterbacks that have come in and play. Chad Henne, this guy's been in the league since like 1972. Like, you got plenty of tape on Chad Henne. You know everything about him.
1972.
I mean, he's been in this league for a long time. Yeah, so like that's the difference between, you know, having to get ready for a guy you don't know. You know, you got ready for Johnny. When the Cardinals had to get ready for Johnny Wolford, I mean, where were you getting the tape from? When you got to get ready for Strevler. Again, there are quarterbacks out there. You're like, you don't know enough about him. You don't know a lot about him. RG3 comes into a game. He just got cut. But RG3 comes into the game. You got film. Chad Henne comes into the game. You got film. So, you know, that's the advantage, I would think, for Buffalo is that, okay. But they could also look at the system. I mean, you know, they have a system. And they're going to run very similar plays. And maybe he can't execute the same way that Patrick Mahomes could execute. But they're going to run the same system. Like, it's going to be – they're not going to change the whole playbook because Chad Henne's in the game. Chad Henne's a veteran quarterback. He's going to pick up the system. And he's going to run that system. Again, not will not be able to execute at the level Mahomes does, but that's what you get ready for more than anything is the system.
Yeah, here's – okay, I was scrolling through my tweets and I was looking for this one. This is from Carrington Harrison. He is a host at 610 Sports in Kansas City as well as CBS Sports Radio. He said on a show or tweeted this out. A source has told me, he wrote on Twitter, that Patrick passed all of his tests last night. He didn't actually hit his head. There was a nerve in his neck that got tweaked that made him out of it. He's getting testing done on his neck and nerve today, but he did clear all the tests last night. Now, that's coming right out of Kansas City. Jay Glazer retweeted that. So, like you said, I think he's going to play. I think when it's all said and done, he's going to be available to play. I do understand it adds a certain – and there is a certain advantage to Kansas City trying to keep this as mysterious as possible to make Buffalo do work that they wouldn't normally have to do otherwise. What's interesting about this is – you go back and you look at when these two teams met during the regular season, and it was what's really weird about it. It was in week six, which is exactly the same week that the Packers played the Bucks in
that?
The regular
I didn't know
season.
That.
Yeah, exact same week in the NFL. Kind of weird coincidence right there. Patrick Mahomes didn't really do that much against the Bills.
No,
in
they
that
ran
game. It was Kansas City running game that demolished Buffalo in that game. If you go back and look at it.
Yeah, Clyde Edwards-Helaire had 161 yards rushing. Mahomes didn't, but Allen didn't do anything either. I mean, Allen threw for 122. Buffalo had a season-low 206 yards. But Mahomes had 225 yards. That was his third lowest of the season. So neither quarterback was great in that game, but it was the Kansas City rushing attack with Clyde Edwards-Helaire that was very good. Now, Buffalo, since the Cardinals game, since they lost that – Cardinals scored 32 points against them. 32. That was the Hail Mary to Hopkins. Arizona won the game 32-30. That was week 10. Up until that point, they had given up a lot of points. The Buffalo defense was not playing very well. Since then, they've given up – and I'm going to get my calculator here because I don't know the number. They've given up 137 points divided by 8 games. 17 points a game since the Cardinals. 17 points a game since they lost to the Cardinals. Their defense has had a huge turnaround since that time.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why sometimes you look at these, okay, these matchups. You have to go all the way back to week 6 to see, you know, what the Bucs did against the Packers or what the Chiefs did against the Bills. Are there some things you can take from that? Yes, there are some things you can take from that. The Buffalo Bills are playing at an entirely different level than they were back then. I mean, they've defensively, offensively, they have reached levels that they just weren't at in week 6 of the regular season. So I'm going to look at both of those matchups and take it with a real grain of salt when it comes to, well, this happened in week 6, therefore it's going to happen again. Not that that Bills run defense, you see the number they did on Lamar Jackson and Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins on Saturday, right?
Shut them down.
So to think the Kansas City's going to run all over them like they did in week 6, that's a different Bills defense now. And Josh Allen and that offense is playing at a much higher level than they were back then. This is a totally different game. It's hard to take lessons out of that game and apply it to the AFC Championship game. At least for me it is. It's really hard.
Yeah, anytime, right? Like, take the New Orleans-Tampa Bay game, right? Saints beat them both times in a regular season. And then Drew Brees failed to show up, and he threw a bunch of picks, and then it was a completely different game. I mean, yeah. So I don't think there's any lessons to be learned by something that happened in week 6. Not one. I mean, not one lesson to be learned by that game. It just doesn't matter. You know, Green Bay, didn't they get smoked by Tampa?
Green Bay got smoked by Tampa.
Yeah.
Yes.
Does that mean anything? No. Nothing.
No.
Just like
nope.
The New Orleans Bucks game didn't mean. It doesn't mean anything. Week 6, Buffalo, Kansas City, doesn't mean a thing.
When we come back, Phoenix Suns dropped a close game to the Memphis Grizzlies yesterday. Today, that loss is not sitting well with their superstar. You'll hear from him next on the Burns and Gambo Show.